May it please the Court, Victor Zauner represent the petitioner, Mr. Art Escobar. Mr. Escobar is 30 years old and has been in this country since his infancy. He's married to his wife, Amy, and has two sons, Isaiah and Gabriel, all U.S. citizens. The questions before this Court are, one, whether he will be rendered inadmissible because of a paraphernalia possession, even though a paraphernalia possession is not punishable under federal law, and two, whether he will be eligible for a waiver of that offense. Because Congress has created an express...
You have a sympathetic case, but the problem is that the federal statute doesn't have any reference to... the waiver business doesn't have any reference to paraphernalia. So I don't know how you get to first base.
Right. Your Honor, as you had suggested in oral argument a few sessions ago, there's a word related to in that particular provision, and as you suggested, related to can be ambiguous and can be broad and can extend to many things. This is something that this Court recognized in the...
That's true, but how does a paraphernalia conviction relate to a single offense of simple possession of 30 grams or less? Because the paraphernalia and quantity are unrelated to each other, right? Because you can have the pipe... and smoke, and you can have a stockpile, a year's supply of marijuana, and you smoke it, till it's gone. So you'd possess a lot more than 30 grams, or you could have less than 30 grams. They're just on different tracks, so they don't relate to each other.
Right.
We don't know how much marijuana your client possessed.
We don't. We know that when he was pulled over, there was no marijuana that was discovered.
I know, but he has the pipe, so presumably he smokes marijuana, so he has it somewhere, or the future, or past, or who knows what.
Right, but to address your question, this is something that the Ninth Circuit explored in the Cardenas-Uriarte decision, where it...
What if he had 10 pipes? Would that make a difference?
I'm sorry?
What if he had 10 pipes? Would that make a difference?
It wouldn't necessarily make a difference to this case because Congress has made a categorical decision that paraphernalia possession is not something that's worthy of punishment under the federal controlled substance laws, but possession of actual controlled substances are worthy of punishment.
Now, that argument goes to your first point, though, doesn't it? What you're calling the inadmissibility part of the statute as opposed to the waiver provision?
Right, Your Honor. I think it goes to both points. It goes to the second point to the extent that there has been a categorical determination that paraphernalia possession is a lesser offense than possession of actual paraphernalia. And it goes to the first point to the extent that the Federal Controlled Substance Act does not punish paraphernalia possession. And if you look at the intent of the legislator when it drafted the inadmissibility provision, the introducer of the amendment, Mr. Dan Lundgren, got up and said... The coverage of this particular provision extends to those who are convicted under drug offenses on the federal law.
We have to make some sense of this statute that says a violation of any law or regulation of a state, U.S., or foreign country relating to a controlled substance, and then we have this parenthetical, as defined in. So we don't know whether as defined in means any law or regulation that corresponds to the Controlled Substances Act, or whether it's just the controlled substance that has to be defined in the statute. Now, this language is a little bit different from the language the Supreme Court was looking at in Lopez versus Gonzalez. Maybe you could comment about that.
Sure. In Lopez versus Gonzalez, the United States adopted the hypothetical federal felony test, which this Court had stated earlier in the Gonzalez-Gomez decision. We believe that the logic of Lopez and Gonzalez-Gomez can be imported to this...
Lopez construed particular language, and this is obviously different language. It looks like the reference as defined in Section 802, et cetera, is modifying the phrase a controlled substance. That's certainly the application of the rule of the immediate antecedent. And Lopez did not involve that problem at all. There are lots of these statutes that refer to violations of state law, aggravated felony under state law, and so on. Is there some part of Lopez, some of the actual language that was construed in Lopez that matches onto the language in 1182A2A12?
Right. Thanks for the alphabet.
We'll just call it the statute.
Right, the statute. Judge Posner wrote in Gonzales-Gomez.
First, an answer about the Seventh Circuit does not deal with my question. And second, it doesn't matter who writes the opinions of this court. But particularly when I ask a question about Lopez, it cannot be answered by reference to a decision of the Seventh Circuit. So if you would deal with my question, I would appreciate it.
Thank you, Your Honor. Taken under advisement. You're right, Lopez does not deal with the statute here. However,
is there any similarity in language of this statute to the language that was involved in Lopez?
The similarity is that both statutes make an express reference to a federal statute. Here, the express reference
yes,
is...
Yes, but look, that as defined in Section 802, that has to be the definition of controlled substance. Otherwise, controlled substance wouldn't have a definition.
Section 802, parenthetical 6, actually defines controlled substance.
Otherwise, if it modifies anything else, the statute is incoherent, right? You would want to read it as any law or regulation of a state, paren, as defined in Section 802 of Title 21. Well, Section 802 of Title 21 doesn't define states.
Well,
it only defines controlled substances.
No, but I mean, if you go back to Lopez, as the court's opinion points out, the statute it was construing there also applied, it defined the term aggravated felony as an offense described in this paragraph, whether in violation of federal or state law, or sometimes even a foreign country. It's just that, as Judge Easterbrook said, the immediate antecedent, if you will, was the definition of offense. And to get back to law or regulation, you've got to jump through some other language. And I know you want to go to the legislative history to explain why we should do that, but I guess the first step is there an ambiguity anyway? Ought we to defer to something the BIA has to say about this, either in this case or more generally? Because you need to get to the point where any law or regulation has to either be in federal law or analogous to something in federal
Your Honor,
law.
I see I'm running into my rebuttal time, so I'll answer this question and I'll come back and address the waiver issue.
You'll answer all the questions we ask.
Thank you.
And then you'll come back if you have any time left.
And I'm aware of the textual antecedent rule. That was a point that was addressed in the Desai case, which addressed a similar issue earlier. To get to ambiguity, I think we need to look at the term related to, which immediately precedes controlled substance. As this court recognized in Fort Wayne Community Schools, related to can be determined very broadly because in ultimately, taken to its farthest limits, relation really stops nowhere. So the question becomes, where does that relation stop? And I believe to resolve that ambiguity, we can look at the legislative history of the particular provision in which the introducer, the sponsor of the particular amendment, said that he wanted to align this particular provision with all the drug offenses on the federal law. And that is why we believe that the limits of the of this particular statute is coextensive with that of the Federal Controlled Substance Act and related.
How long has it been since the Supreme Court has used statements of individual members of Congress to construe an act? Committee reports sometimes, but individual members of Congress?
I don't know the exact answer to your question, Judge, but
more than a generation.
Wouldn't the sale of drug paraphernalia or drug manufacturing equipment or drug processing equipment or something like that, wouldn't that have to be relating to a controlled substance?
It would be, because under 21 U.S. 863, sale and import and use of mails to distribute paraphernalia is punished. But Congress has made a categorical judgment that paraphernalia possession is not punishable.
But it says a violation of any law or regulation of a state.
Right, we understand.
Relating to a controlled substance. So if a state punishes possession of drug paraphernalia, wouldn't that have to be relating to a controlled substance?
The interest articulated in Gonzales-Gomez for the uniform application of federal immigration laws, which lies at the core.
No, you can't do that. You can't do that. It says specifically state. That means they know there's going to be disuniformity.
But in order to avoid that
You can't avoid it. You cannot avoid it.
We
if you avoid it, you just wipe out state. You just remove that from the statute.
We're not removing that from the statute because we understand that.
We want to rewrite the statute. A violation of any law or regulation that's forbidden by the federal code, U.S. code, or something. Right? That's what you're saying.
Right, but we don't believe the word state is superfluous because prosecutions can take place in either foreign state or federal jurisdiction.
No, it's not that it's superfluous. It's what you're trying to do to the statute.
You're going nowhere on this front. Let me take you, before you sit down, back to the relating to language. A conviction is out if it relates to less than 30 grams of marijuana. When there's a conviction for some other offense, whether it's paraphernalia or smoking in public, something like that, how do we know the quantity of marijuana that it relates to? If we can't figure out the quantity, how could we apply this waiver provision?
Quantity can be ascertained through the record of conviction, which includes the charging document, the plea agreement, and any...
In a paraphernalia prosecution, the quantity is not going to be available because it's not relevant to the paraphernalia charge. Let me give you another example. Somebody is convicted of smoking marijuana in a public place. Right? The crime is not a quantity of marijuana. It's the place where you smoke it. And so the charging document won't have a quantity in it. Is there some way that could be covered by this? I can certainly understand the sense in which smoking marijuana in a public place relates to possessing marijuana. But if there's no quantity involved in the state prosecution, how can we know whether it's under 30 grams? That's the question I'm asking.
Your Honor, we believe the quantity reflects a judgment of how serious an offense needs to be.
Well, you would have to say, you started to say that it's going to depend on the particular record as opposed to an across-the-board point. And if it's smoking one joint in a public place, I've never seen a joint that's an entire ounce and some of marijuana.
It's just a question of how much else he has in his pocket.
Right.
But that may not get into the record.
But, no, it may not. But if the charge only focuses on the smoking, then that's what it relates to.
Okay.
What if a person were in the business of selling drug paraphernalia of all sorts?
Right.
A wholesaler of drug paraphernalia. Would you say that that also doesn't relate to substance?
That would relate to a controlled substance because sale of drug paraphernalia is expressly covered by 21 U.S.C. 863. However, possession of paraphernalia is not covered, and that I think that reflects a categorical judgment.
If you're confusing the two questions. This is not a question about whether something is in under the statute, but out under the waiver clause.
Right. And we believe the waiver, when the waiver clause was enacted, it reflected the judgment that minor drug offenders ought to have some reprieve from the harsh measure removal.
But we can't tell whether someone is a minor drug offender in terms of quantity, right, in a case like this.
We can't tell exactly on the basis of quantity, but we can tell on the basis of seriousness. And I do believe that the 30 grams was just a mere threshold. That's sort of a proxy for how serious the crime ought to be.
One thing you could be saying is that we know zero is less than one, and if they'd put 1 gram in the indictment, that would be less than 30. So therefore, any time the state offense is a marijuana-related offense and it does not name a quantity, it's less than 30. Is that your position?
My position is that you need to look at how serious the state punishes the particular crime when compared with...
The waiver clause doesn't have anything to do with a maximum sentence. It has to do with whether it relates to less than 30 grams of marijuana. So one way of interpreting that is to say... If the state charge does not have a quantity of marijuana over 30, regardless of what it is, pipe, smoking in public, selling to minors, you name it, then it's covered by the waiver clause. Is that your position?
I will I will concede that position. But in addition to just...
If you would concede it, I asked if it was your position.
It is part of my...
It's the only position on which you can win.
It is part of my position. But in addition, I do believe we need to examine the seriousness of the crime as determined by the state legislatures.
None of that is actually in the federal statute. Thank you very much, counsel. Ms. Morgan. Ms. Morgan, let me start you off with a variation of the hypothetical I just asked.
Okay.
Someone is smoking marijuana in a public park. He has, it's actually not very much left, so he's smoking it with a roach clip.
Yes.
Right? He is caught in public with a roach clip with 1 gram of marijuana. Right? And the state prosecutor chooses to prosecute him for 1 gram of marijuana. No doubt he's eligible for a waiver, right? That's what the statute says. That's the core meaning of this statute. You agree with that, right?
The waiver provision actually doesn't mention paraphernalia at all, of course.
Neither
does mention...
Well,
listen to my hypothetical. He is prosecuted for possessing 1 gram of marijuana. He's covered by the waiver clause. You agree with that, right? That's what it says. Second possibility is the state prosecutor prosecutes him for possessing the roach clip that he used to smoke the joint. Now, in your view, what happens?
In my view, you look at the record of conviction, and if it's not clear from the record of conviction what amount is involved, then...
All right. So are you saying that if the prosecutor puts in the charging document, we caught him smoking 1 gram of marijuana with a roach clip, then it's covered by the waiver clause... But if the state prosecutor says, we caught him smoking marijuana with a roach clip, then it's not covered by the waiver clause. Is that your position?
I probably wouldn't go quite that far.
I don't know what quite that far means. This is a matter of statutory interpretation, not of distance.
Yes. In your hypothetical, in addition to, I guess you're saying that they're going to include an amount on the record of conviction.
They either are or they are not.
Right.
Right. I understood your answer to be if they put on the record, we caught him smoking 1 gram of marijuana with a roach clip and that violates our paraphernalia statute, it would be covered by, it would be within the scope of the waiver clause because that would relate to less than 30 grams of marijuana. The second possibility is that the state charging paper doesn't put in the charge, the weight of the joint. And I take it your view is that then it's outside the scope of the waiver. And I'm trying to figure out whether that makes any sense.
Don't go there. No. Don't concede that. No, your position has to be, no matter whether the quantity is known not, is minute, is that if you're prosecuted for the possession of the paraphernalia, you're ineligible for the waiver. Otherwise,
it's
all
complete lunacy, right? So
is it your position
that if you're prosecuted, if the charging paper says we caught him smoking 1 gram of marijuana with a roach clip, violating our paraphernalia statute, is that inside the waiver or out?
I'm going to say that it's outside of the waiver because...
What has the board said about that, by the way?
I don't believe that the board has addressed this in a published decision.
All right. And that leave, if that's your position, and it's a perfectly coherent position, I suppose, in your view, what does the phrase relates to in the waiver clause contain? Because it doesn't sound like those words have any function anymore. What, in your view, function do they have?
I tend to agree that... In the case of the waiver provision, the phrase relates to is somewhat confusing. I can imagine nothing that would relate to simple possession.
But we normally construe statutes so that we don't make their language irrelevant. The thing that attracts most of my attention in this case is the fact that Mr. Escobar got within the scope of this exclusion only because the statute talks about a violation of any law of a substance, et cetera, relating to a controlled substance. So you use the relating to phrase to get the alien in trouble, and there's now another relating to phrase in the waiver clause, and you say, well, but that doesn't have any meaning. That can never get the alien out of trouble.
Now, what you should say is that relates to a single offense of simple possession of 30 grams or less means that the state, or for that matter the federal government, might not define the offense in that way, right?
I like that answer very much.
It could be called something else. You know, it could have a different limit than 30 grams, you know. He could be prosecuted for possessing 1 gram. Maybe that's some little infraction under Nebraska law. And you would say, well, that relates to a single offense of simple possession of 30 grams or less. Because it's marijuana, it's just possession, no intent to distribute, and it's less than 30 grams. So that would have to be your position. Otherwise, again, your case just unravels completely.
But I don't see, if that is your position, why the statute isn't exactly the same as one that says, insofar as it is a single offense of simple possession of 30 grams or less of marijuana. You could simply read that to be anything encompassing that under federal, state, or foreign law. I still don't see why that would explain the use of the word relates to. That suggests that it's sort of circling around somehow the 30 grams or less possession. And I was bothered by the inconsistency in the government's position as well between these two things. If you're sweeping in these paraphernalia convictions as you are.
I would agree with Judge Posner that the only way to make sense of the phrase relating to in regards to the waiver provision is that it's simply referring to a lesser amount than 30 grams.
But
in whatever
says
the crime
that.
Is.
It says 30 grams or less.
Or less.
We don't need to.
You don't need relates to when it already says or less. And besides, it would be just ridiculous, even with the phrase or less missing, to say that it allows a waiver only when the alien happens to possess exactly 30 grams, but neither 29 nor 31. It's kind of like winning the lottery. If the alien is carrying a series of ping pong balls with the numbers 30, 56, 23, gets a waiver of removability.
I agree the language is somewhat problematic, but even so, in this
if it is problematic, and the board has never said a word about it, I mean, it chose in this instance to do one of its single-member, non-precedential, you know, we're disclaiming any association with this kinds of opinions. The board didn't have to do that. They could have convened as a three-member board, given it some consideration, but they didn't. So that leaves it up to us to try to understand how this statute fits into the overall structure.
I can only assume that the board didn't struggle with this issue at all.
And then we can tell they didn't. We see the one sentence in their opinion.
Well, actually, the board's opinion says this statute is crystal clear, and therefore it can't cover it. But I don't know how it can be thought crystal clear with a phrase like relates to in it. Right?
Well, in this particular case,
my view is that it's crystal clear that the phrase relates to is so much empty noise enacted by Congress. That didn't seem to be the board's view, that it was that Congress had enacted a bunch of words that had no meaning.
No, I would say that wasn't their position. It's simply that the plain language on its face doesn't address drug paraphernalia at all, and it wasn't considered relating
why
to.
Why is paraphernalia not relating to the drug? That's why I started with this example of somebody who violated three laws at once by smoking a joint in public with a roach clip, and ask whether the roach clip relates to the joint.
In this particular case, we have no indication at all in the record, as was pointed out earlier, how much marijuana may or may not have been involved.
Back to my opening question, the state charge could say there was 1 gram in the roach, and it could say there was
or you could look at a paraphernalia conviction where there's no associated drug and look at it as just a straightforward paraphernalia conviction where the amount of marijuana is zero.
Yeah,
I don't see why that's not the most straight. I assure you, I mean, states are happy to charge these things, and if he'd had a bunch, you know, a little Ziploc bag with some marijuana also in the glove compartment, he almost certainly would have been charged with that.
Your argument has to be they couldn't have charged him with possession of 30 grams or less because they didn't know whether he had any, right?
Well,
Do we know whether they got a warrant and searched his home?
It was in his car.
No, but there was no marijuana in the car.
Correct. So the,
right.
The
so they couldn't charge him with simple possession of 30 grams or less of marijuana. They could only do the paraphernalia.
They could only do something that related to simple possession.
It can't
a
relate
pipe
to
that
something
smells like
that
marijuana.
We have no evidence, right?
I again, sort of like Judge Posner's position on this one. I agree. They couldn't have charged him, or at least on the record as it's presented, unclear whether he possessed any marijuana at all. If I could make, I see my time is up.
A set of people who possess pot pipes and no pot?
There could be.
Sure.
Is this a pot pipe collector? Like we have collectors of antique guns, even though the guns don't fire. And so we have collectors of pot pipes, even though they have no pot?
You buy the coffee machine before you buy the coffee.
Here's my bong collection.
If I may, I see my time is up, but I wanted to make one other thing clear. The context of this case is adjustment of status rather than removability. So the burden of proof is actually on the petitioner rather than the government.
Yeah, but we're not talking burdens of proof. We're talking meaning of statute.
Well, I think potentially
it could
make a difference.
Okay, thank you very much, counsel. Counsel, we asked you a lot of questions. We'll give you 1 minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Two quick points. First, the language 30 grams or less should be read in conjunction with for one's own use. The record does not show any marijuana was involved, but we can only assume...
Right. That means he couldn't be charged with possession of marijuana, right?
He could have had
a ton of marijuana. But they didn't find any, so they couldn't prosecute him for that, right?
Right, but without regard to the quantity of marijuana,
Well, what if he had a ton of marijuana?
The record doesn't reflect that, however.
That's true, but that's because they got the pipe, right? They were content with the pipe.
The pipe could only be used for...
It's just marijuana.
The pipe could only be used for one's own use of marijuana. And secondly, the hypothetical that was presented to
that certainly isn't true. Pot pipes are passed around.
I'm not a participant of that culture, so I wouldn't know. But nevertheless, the hypothetical that the hypothetical that the court presented, where Mr. Escobar will be entitled to the provision if only the charging document showed some marijuana, versus the present circumstances, illustrates the precise absurdity that this court noted in Gutnick, in which a person would be better off if there were actually marijuana on his person, and that is the absurdity that we urge the court.
This, unfortunately, the immigration laws. And the drug laws are riddled with absurdities.
Yep.
Riddled. Right, but we construe statutes to avoid absurdity.
And here, what I don't understand, let me ask, I'll ask Judge Eastwood, the version of Judge Eastwood's question. What do you think, if you think as it relates is ambiguous, as it relates to a single offense of simple possession, how would you reword the statute? To make your sense of it clear.
Our sense of it is that relating to 30...
How would you say it?
Redraft the statute.
Offense insofar as it's less serious than possession of 30 grams or less.
I can't hear you. Insofar as what?
Insofar as it is less serious than possession of 30...
As it is less serious? Uh-oh.
Right, because
uh-oh.
If you...
Uh-oh, that's bad.
That's a multidimensional
attribute.
Yeah,
that's really bad.
That's just getting
See,
us...
See, this language may be as clear as you can put it. Try something else.
As it relates to personal consumption of small quantities of marijuana.
Well, that doesn't do it, because, apart from small quantities, because... We just don't know anything about quantity. That's the problem. We don't know the quantity. If the state decides, look, we're going to nail you for paraphernalia, then you never get into an issue of quantity. So I think you should say, you know, insofar as it relates either to a single offense of simple possession or to paraphernalia. That's what you're arguing.
Right, but Congress never would have thought to include the word paraphernalia in the provision because paraphernalia possession is not punishable under federal law.
No, that's completely wrong because we know from the previous section, you know, the double two, whatever it is, we know that a violation of state law can, you know, eliminate your opportunity for adjustment of status. We know that. So if you want to make an exception for paraphernalia, it has to be somehow in here, in this waiver provision.
Right, but it has to be...
And there isn't any way, I think, in which you can word that without the use of paraphernalia. If you try to define it in terms of quantity, you are shipwrecked on the fact that there's no quantity when you're just prosecuting for paraphernalia.
There is no quantity, but we can only assume that the paraphernalia is for one's own use of marijuana.
No, you can't assume anything.
No.
You can't assume anything.
You can't assume that.
Right.
Do you know, just your factual question, well, it's a factual question about law. Are there any states that whose paraphernalia statutes depend on the paraphernalia being seized in conjunction with the drugs for which they're used?
The District of Columbia does not punish the possession of bare paraphernalia. Therefore, if paraphernalia is discovered in conjunction with a substance, then it would be a crime. However, if it is not, then it would not be a crime. That is the only jurisdiction.
D.C., any others you know of?
Through our research, D.C. is the only jurisdiction where it's discovered that that comports with that.
So you really want us to amend 1182H to add that? That D.C. rule. That's what you want us to do.
Well, no. We urge the court to construe the statute to avoid absurdity. And we can
it had been amended that way. Right.
Well, it wouldn't be this statute, but the possibility remains that indeed, if the paraphernalia conviction were in D.C., then perhaps that paraphernalia conviction would relate to the quantity of drugs.
Well, if it happened in D.C., there wouldn't be a conviction. We wouldn't be standing here today because possession of bare paraphernalia is not a crime in the District of Columbia.
Yeah, that's what Judge Easterbrook was saying. Yeah.
Right.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.
Okay.